This video is brought to you by Holocaza. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description. Hello and welcome everyone to our 105th session of Holocaza. My name is Michael and today I'm talking to Morgan McGillivray from Manila in the Philippines. Morgan has been working in the real estate business for many years, is focused on commercial real estate, and I'm happy to have you on board again so that you can give me an update. I think the last time we spoke was prior to COVID, and COVID has happened. COVID in Asia was strong, and then COVID and commercial real estate has a huge impact. So I'm really really happy to have you again, and so that you can give us a nice update.
Great. Well, thanks for having me back. Yeah, a lot has happened since we last spoke.
Absolutely. Morgan, why don't you quickly introduce yourself to our audience? Why are you in Manila in the Philippines? What is basically so interesting about the market? And maybe you can give us also a quick intro about your service offerings.
Sure. So maybe we'll start with why am I here in the Philippines?
Absolutely.
As most, a lot of your listeners will guess, I have an American accent. I'm from California. After I finished university, I worked for a firm in California in the early 2000s that was actually using a Filipino call center to help assist with accounts and everything. So I was managing accounts from California, but I was working with a team here in Manila who I was communicating with just over the phone and chat and whatnot. And eventually I started traveling to Manila to do work-related trainings and the like. While I was over here, I met the young lady who's now my wife. So we just grew closer and closer over time. By 2009 or so, I just finished some graduate school work. I didn't have a job, needed somewhere to hang out during the global financial crisis, decided to spend some time with her here in Manila, and then decided, you know what, I enjoy my time here in the Philippines so much, maybe I should look for work here. Because what was happening, and the world didn't know about it, but in the early 2000s, there was this growing and burgeoning call center industry that wasn't widely publicized the way it was in India, but the Philippines was growing at just about the same rate, right? And so all the big firms from America and around the world were setting up these call centers, or what's called shared services office here. So you could see all the growth happening around us. And I said, okay, well, this is a really great place to be right now. I will look for work. And after about being in the country for a year and learning the language and everything, I got contacted by my current employer, which was CBRE, the big real estate firm at the time. We are now called Santos Knight Frank. So we've changed our affiliation, but that's it. And that all happened 13 years ago. So the whole time I have been a tenant representation broker. So I help companies here find office space, lease office space, negotiate all that good stuff.
Interesting. Thank you so much. Maybe you can give us a quick intro about the business hub of Manila. Why do people, or why do companies decide to go to Manila, to the Philippines, and not to India, for example? What is basically maybe also the difference between India and Manila? I guess you sometimes also talk about it when you talk to potential clients.
Yeah, the reasons have changed over time. So at the beginning, I think it was just a low-cost alternative. So companies in the early 2000s, in fact, before that, the first kind of outsourcing to here was for the Y2K computer issue, where companies would outsource just really manual kind of Y2K coding jobs to the Philippines, because it could be done, the work could be done well and for much, much cheaper costs than it would be done in the US or elsewhere. So that began. But then when they connected the Philippines via a T1 internet cable, and you could start to do the communication, the phone calls long distance over the internet rather than over long distance telephone calls, that's when it really took off, because it really dropped the cost of being able to communicate and do outbound calling and the like from the Philippines. So these companies recognized pretty quickly that they could get these really intelligent college graduates to do basic customer service level one work at a small fraction of the cost of not only salary, but the real estate, the, you know, the 401k, call it what you want, all the costs is quite a bit lower. And at that same time, India was also doing well, but the industry was kind of realizing, I think, that the Indian accent was not attractive to certain markets around the world. I know that Australia had a bit of an issue where Indian telemarketers were calling Australians sometimes trying to pretend they were Australians. And the Australian market really didn't like that. So it put a kind of a negative light upon India with regard to voice-related work, whereas the Filipino accent was much more neutral American. So it really didn't become the same kind of issue because people couldn't even really tell that they were talking with a Filipino necessarily. And because the Filipinos already spoke really good English and didn't need that much training, you had this huge labor pool of young, educated workers, English speaking for cheap. And so, of course, from there, it just continued to take off and do quite well. Over time, costs have gone up, salary expectations, fights over competition, over employees, and even over real estate. So now I'd say the reasons are more that they're finding that Filipinos are quite capable of doing kind of knowledge process type of jobs. So these could be architects, accountants, the like, who are just doing, the same work that might be done somewhere in Sydney or Boston or whatever. But it can be done again for cheaper here. Less expensive here, great attitudes here. And so companies are starting to also find other opportunities besides just that level one tech support or level one customer service support. And so again, companies continue to come here, but more likely than not now, they're just growing here because, most of the firms are already here. The growth comes from firms expanding while they're here.
Interesting. And most of the markets you are serving, or those companies are serving, is it still within Asia, or is it also in Europe and also the US? So they
It's
also
mostly
have
US.
mostly in the US. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I'd say.
Understood. Regarding Manila itself, give us an update there. How has it changed itself from since we talked last time, COVID-wise and stuff? Still as vibrant as you mentioned last time, as hectic as you mentioned last time, or have there any strong developments within the last years?
Yeah. So last time we spoke, the market was quite hot here. And then it all ground to a halt in 2020 because of COVID. The lockdowns here were pretty strict by global standards. And so everyone was at home. The offices were generally empty, the exception being some of the call center and kind of BPO, business process outsourcing operations, actually had employees living inside the office because the work had to be done from inside the office and not from the employee's home. So the Philippine government, to their credit, did recognize this and made exceptions for employees to live in nearby hotels or live in the office. But other than that, everyone went home and stayed home for quite a while. Now, some of the strictest lockdown was lifted, and we were allowed to gradually return to the office by percentage. It started at 10%, now 50% can come in. And eventually we got to 100% would be allowed to come in. But at that point, a lot of the employees of these offices had grown quite accustomed to working from home. And as I probably mentioned, even before the pandemic, traffic is a bit of an issue here, and employee commutes are a bit of an issue here. A lot of people commute from somewhere between 30 up to probably 90 minutes a day just to get to the office. So everyone was getting very comfortable making the 30-second commute from their bedroom to their living room or whatnot. And now the companies had to decide, okay, do we bring everyone back in? And if so, is everyone going to come back in, or are they going to threaten to resign? So the companies were really delicate about trying to bring people back in to an extent, but also respecting the rights of employees who wanted to stay home and continue to work from home. So we went through about 2 years, through most of 2021 and 2022, where there was some kind of a hybrid, bringing people in a couple times, meet, work together, have some fun, but then also giving people work from home rights and part of their kind of job compensation package would be we will integrate some work from home, some hybrid into it. And I think we still remain at that point to this day, although the companies are starting to want more and more people to come back in. And I think that what they're seeing is that the productivity is really highest when people are in the office. Right? Productivity kind of declines slowly the more and more people were working from home, as you could expect. And then the companies looked at it and said, okay, well, a little bit of work from home, but a little bit more work from office. We've got to get those productivity numbers where we need them to be. And so that's what we're starting to see. And then what was important in that, and I'll make this my last point on the matter, was that under the old presidential administration, which was the Duterte administration, and then there was a new administration that took over, let's call it July of last year, a little bit later than that. There was a discussion because the Philippine laws for a lot of these call centers. It was laws, but really they were tax incentive programs to encourage companies to set up here. Things like zero income tax, zero value-added tax. There's a program called PEZA, PEZA, which I'd say about 80% of the call centers were participating in and have been for a long time now. Well, PEZA's rules were always 100% work from office, right? And that's the way it had always been. And then during the lockdowns, they relaxed it quite a bit to the point where it was 0% from offices needed. But as the kind of state of emergency was getting ready to be lifted, everyone in the industry was wondering, will they go back to the old PEZA rules of 100% work from office? And if so, would that devastate the call center industry here in the Philippines? Because if the employees didn't want to come back, or the employers didn't want to bring people back, or more importantly, if the clients of the call centers who are based in the US heard that the employees were being forced to come back when they didn't want to, the clients were threatening to move their operations to other countries around the world. So we didn't want that here. So luckily, it was eventually the rules got changed and the PEZA program rules were changed to the point where the companies were allowed to do even 0% work from office if they wanted to, while still maintaining some of the benefits. So the government got very practical very quickly and relaxed the rules. So now the firms themselves are setting the work from home, work from office rules, which is probably the way it should be.
Absolutely, makes total sense. And the impact on your business and the entire commercial real estate business has obviously been quite intense. So how is that? How do you feel that? And what's the impact there for your business?
Yeah, it's been really mixed for my business. So, a very slow 2020, 2021, 2022, even, because there just was not much office demand. Who would want to take a new office when you're still under partial lockdowns, employees aren't coming in, et cetera? So, I was kept busy just mostly doing renewals, and sometimes even corporate downsizings. But that's now starting to change. So, in 2023, everything is pretty much back to normal here. Certainly, the state of emergency has been lifted and the like. And so now, what we're seeing is a lot of the third-party call centers who have clients in the US, Australia, Europe, et cetera, we're starting to see some growth from them for the first time in a long time. So they're out there taking up space again. And they do have a lot of space to choose from because there's a lot of supply. And the reason there's a lot of supply is because throughout the pandemic, the buildings continued to go up, meaning there was construction was allowed for all but about the most strict 3 months over the last couple of years. So the buildings were completing, the new supply was coming on, but there was no more demand. And so that took what was very much a landlord's market, flipped it on its head, and put us in a tenant's market in just about all the business districts here in Metro Manila. So you've got all this new supply coming. But then you also had a lot of the corporate headquarter types, which are very different from the call centers. So the corporate headquarter kind of offices, what I found with a lot of them, including my own clients, is that pre-pandemic, they might have been leasing a whole office floor in a building. And then post-pandemic, after trying out hybrid for a couple of years, they say, look, we're going to have an office, but we only need about half the space we're leasing right now. We can make it work with 50% of what we're currently leasing. So we'd like to renew our current lease when the expiry comes up, but let's ask the landlord to downsize it by half. Or let's move to a building where there's an office that half the size. We'll invest some money in a new fit out so that it's a nice, attractive office, but we're not going to lease 1,000 square meters anymore. We can get it done in 500 square meters. So as these lease expiries come up over the next couple of years, we'll probably find that a lot of the corporates here are continue to follow that path until they've officially right-sized. And that will create more supply in the market too. That's second generation, third generation supply, in addition to the new building supply. And so that's why it's kind of become a tenant's market again for those tenants who are actually still growing here.
The lease is normally for how many years? Is there any restriction?
3 years up to 5 years, usually. So if you come in, you build out a nice new office, you'll usually sign a 5-year lease. If you renew, it might be for 3 years. But the one thing I'll say, because if you have audience out there considering entering the Philippines, there is now also an industry where you can come in, take already, created seats or already built seats for a 6-month period or a 1-year period just to try it out, right? If you don't like it, you just don't renew the contract, very little lost except for time and effort. But at least you don't have that big financial investment in a project that just doesn't work out for your company. So you can come in here and lease 50 seats for 3 months if you want to and just renew it until you're comfortable. In which case, then eventually, as you grow big enough, I might advise you to take your own office for cost purposes. But it's really easy to also sign a very short-term lease here for those who just want to test the waters.
Understand. And do I then just send you the requirements and say I need this amount of workspaces, I need meeting rooms, I need XYZ? Or do you have pre-built scenarios? Do you then also work with interior design? How does that work?
Yeah, we can do any of that. I think most companies, when they come in, I'd actually recommend they go to a company kind of like a WeWork, but we have WeWork type firms that are designed specifically for the call center industry here. So what it, you'll go into an existing center that's got very nice amenities, shared amenities, and you'll say, I need a room with 50 seats in it. And so they'll have a nice big room with 50 desks and a little manager's office. And we'll show you five or six of those in the different districts. And then you can just say, okay, this one seems to make the most sense. Let's sign a 6 month lease. So you can do it that way. And I recommend that way because that lets you start to hire, you know, start your hiring practices and the like. Decide, are you truly happy in this location? Where are your employees coming from? And then maybe after a year, 2 years, even sometimes, then it's time to make the jump to an office. A regular office lease, in which case you can take someone else's old furniture or you can take a shell space and then custom design and build it to, you know, your company specifications. Either works, usually depending on how much budget a company's got.
That makes sense. Regarding the locations, you just mentioned it. Can you give us an overview of what is right now, or what do you suggest to go? What is interesting as an employer to go, also with respect to the employees mainly, and also maybe good neighbors with respect to other companies. Give us an overview of maybe the entire or part of the interesting places of Manila.
Sure. So if you want to talk about Manila, there are six business districts where, you know, there are grade A type of office spaces. The most premier district nowadays is called the Bonifacio Global City. And it's a district that's pretty new. It's really started in only about 2005 and has grown to be the biggest office district in the country. You will find a lot of companies here who have their headquarters, both their headquarter type office and their shared service or call center BPO type facility in the Bonifacio Global City. Citibank, JP Morgan, American Express, Unilever, all these companies, you will see their branding up top on the buildings in the Bonifacio Global City. And a lot of people who visit here enjoy to stay there because it's very cosmopolitan. It's very nice and kind of world-class standard. I'd suggest companies always consider that as a location, but it is the most expensive. So again, it depends a little bit on, you know, how much are you looking to spend, how much prestige do you want, and what kind of employees do you need. For a lot of other companies who don't necessarily need the, you know, top tier employees who would value a cosmopolitan surrounding, or just, you know, they don't really need to impress anyone because they're not going to have clients visiting or a lot of other people, then you can go to other districts, such as Quezon City or the Alabang District or the Ortigas District. These are kind of tier two districts that have a lot of the back office type operations because these districts are closer to where a lot of the employees actually live. The buildings are made for call centers, so they're not fancy, they're just practical. The rents are probably 30 to 40% less than the Bonifacio Global City. And you know, it seems to work out for firms who just want to be efficient with their operations here. So a lot of the back office stuff. And then there's always where I am, which is Makati City, which is kind of a blend of Bonifacio Global City and what I just described, kind of the tier two cities. So it used to be the financial hub until it was kind of surpassed by Bonifacio Global City a couple of years ago. Very accessible, rents are a little bit higher, and you can still find some of the local firms and some of the multinationals here as well. So a lot of firms will look at Makati because it's you know, known to be very accessible for all kinds of employees and public transportation. There's some very good high quality buildings here. A lot of the good five-star hotels are here, and it's just an alternative to the Bonifacio Global City.
You just mentioned the pricing. Can you give us an overview on the differences between each of those locations? And also with maybe a comparison of what I would
as an employer needs to pay in the US in a comparable city with the same potential of employees and same setup?
Yeah. So at the higher end, the Bonifacio global city type, I mean, the average asking rent right now is $22 per square meter per month, right? And so how does that compare? Well, that would compare pretty favorably with maybe tier three US cities. It'll be less expensive usually than the tier two US cities, and then tier one cities like New York or LA, it's going to be a small percentage. And I don't know if it's maybe 20%. I'm not sure what some of these US cities are renting for because of all the problems they're having right now. But it is a small fraction of what you'd pay in New York, London, Singapore, Hong Kong, et cetera, to sometimes one-tenth the price. So that's good. In terms of the labor, that's a trickier question, but generally you're looking at somewhere nowadays, probably if you count, you know, medical benefits and everything, somewhere between 10% to 30% of what you pay for an equivalent job in the US. If it's just salary alone, maybe nowadays it's 25 to 40%. But I mean, the savings are going to be substantial. And that's what, you know, some of the value that the companies see in it as well. And again, you don't have kind of you've got a different kind of HMO situation here, much less expensive here. You don't have the 401k. So it's not always the salary so much as it's all the other things. When you take that whole package, savings are pretty significant. But even then, you know, Bonifacio Global City, as I think I mentioned, is about $22, but you can almost cut that number in half too, if you need to, by going to some of the second tier districts here in the Philippines. And then you're starting to compare yourself more against cities in like India. Sometimes the second and third tier cities in India are a better comparison in terms of what you're going to be spending than the developed world. And so we're often actually fighting against Bangalore and other cities in India for the potential business of a US-based company because the costing is similar, and then the companies have to kind of weigh a bunch of different things between these two countries.
Absolutely makes total sense. Do you see any trends which are quite remarkable regarding the pricing, regarding also the next years in terms of the real estate situation? Because you just mentioned it's now going back to you are basically already back at 1% normal office space with regards from the employers. I'm sorry, you have had a huge new batch of supply regarding the construction. You see also on the global landscape maybe different cities popping up. We don't know. Maybe there's a new location which is even becoming more interesting. Where do you see the trend regarding commercial and real estate in Manila over the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. So some trends I'm seeing in Metro Manila right now, actually a big one is ESG. So environmental, social, and governance. And, you know, really specifically environmental when we're talking about office buildings and office leases. So a lot of my clients now, and especially because they're multinationals, you know, if they're going to sign a new lease in a new building, it needs to have the environmental credentials going forward. So it needs to have the LEED certification or the Green Star, or depending on the equivalent needed, but something like that. A lot of my clients are now inquiring, is the building sourced by renewable energy sources, right? And so the Philippine government has programs now where buildings can actually choose to buy electricity from a renewable source rather than just the local supplier. And some buildings are actually doing that. The Philippines is the first country to have EDGE certified carbon neutral buildings. So the first ever EDGE certified carbon neutral building was here in Manila. The first developer portfolio that was entirely EDGE, the NEO Group, give them a shout out, was here in the Philippines as well. So the ESG portion for sure. To a lesser extent, just companies are spending more on their office fit outs nowadays too, because they realize if we're bringing people back in, we're asking them to come back in, got to give them the amenities, got to be a nice new office space that you would enjoy being in, maybe bring in a canteen or some way to feed everyone. So we're certainly seeing that as well. But the other trend that I really should discuss is development outside of Metro Manila, right? So we probably touched on that briefly a couple years ago, but that trend has just accelerated because of the pandemic. Reason being, a lot of the employees come to Metro Manila, they live outside of Metro Manila, right? They were raised somewhere else in the country, but they come into Manila for the jobs. And then during the pandemic, a lot of them went to their home provinces because if you can work from home, you might as well work from home. And that could be in any of the provinces as long as the internet connection was decent. Once those employees went home, they kind of didn't want to come back to Metro Manila if they didn't have to. They wanted to live at home with mom and dad, and if they could keep their job there or work at a local office, a lot of them wanted to, right? And so what happened was that was a trend that was happening anyway, but was accelerated by the pandemic. And so the developers here caught on and pretty quickly started to build the grade A office spaces in these provincial areas that would be necessary for the multinationals to commit to. Multinationals are going to be scared if the only developer in town is some local developer with no track record or et cetera, right? You know, how do we know we're not going to get ripped off? What if the power doesn't work, et cetera? But if the top 10 developers in the country, Manila-based developers, are now putting up buildings in these locations as well, and you know, okay, well, I've got a legitimate big-time developer who, you know, has to follow some kind of rules and laws. I know that they're going to have proper generators to make sure that even if the local area has an electricity shortage or brownout or blackout, as we'd call it, I'm still going to keep my power in the office because those generators are going to kick in, right? So little things like that. And as the developers put up the office spaces, okay, here come the multinationals because some of them just wanted to expand out of Manila anyway, tap into new labor markets, cut costs, et cetera. And so now what we're seeing is even more of that take up, new demand happening in the provinces. And when I say the provinces, we've got Cebu City, which is the second biggest in this country, but that's like a smaller version of Metro Manila, I would say. And we don't really consider it a provincial place. We consider it a tier one. The kind of tier two, tier threes are going to be places like Iloilo, Davao City, Clark Pampanga area, Bacolod. So there are a lot of names here, but they're all seemingly growing and all seemingly getting more office demand. From the multinationals. And sometimes, rarely, some firms want to avoid Manila altogether and just have a provincial strategy. And usually those are the ones that just think Manila is tapped out talent-wise, or they just want to stay low cost. And so they find being in a third tier city, you've got a lot less competition for agents and you pay a lot less for the salaries, for the rent, et cetera.
Amazing. Thank you so much for all that information. I know your time is quite limited, and I really appreciate the conversation where you gave us like a huge huge update on the entire situation. If someone is now looking for a very good and informed real estate agent for their commercial real estate needs, how can people reach out to you?
Yeah, I think the best way is just to email me directly. So I can leave my email address here at Santos Knight Frank in the notes, and just reach out and tell me what you're interested in, or if you just want a consultation, I can help advise. You don't have to know too many details in order to have a conversation with me. I'd be happy to help them set up with that, and then we'll just go from there.
Perfect. Any final thoughts from yourself? Anything we didn't touch upon? Anything you would like to share with the audience?
Geez, that's a good question. nothing comes to mind, other than, you know, there I could give you so many testimonials of firms who have come to the Philippines. Oftentimes, you know, taking a bit of a leap, they weren't sure what they're getting into, starting with 20 agents and now have 200 or 2,000 agents. And the reason really is not just about the costs anymore, it's about the people here. The Filipinos are such a pleasant group of folks to work with, and it's so endearing. And I think to just have sold it on the cost alone, I think wouldn't be fair to them. So I would encourage everyone to come give it a try here. And I think most of the time you're going to be so happy you'll end up growing your business here and just taking, you know, enjoying, let's say, what a fantastic country this really is.
Thank you so much for those amazing last words. I totally agree. Whenever I meet Filipinos, or I once traveled to the Philippines and I was blown away by the people, I felt directly at home. And it's amazing, beautiful country, and it's amazing, amazing people. Thank you so much for all your time, and thank you so much for all the information. I really learned a lot again. I think it's very interesting, the entire business you are in. I think it's especially like right now, also those 2 to 3 years of COVID were very intense for you, I believe. And it's always very, very good to also get an update on how are things moving forward in Manila, in the Philippines. I'm sending you best regards from Europe, and I'm already looking forward to talk to you soon.
Michael, thank you so much for having me, and thanks to everyone for watching.
Thank you so much, Morgan. Have a good one.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.